Hi, my name is Rick, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Welcome, everybody. I'm really, really glad to be here. And this is the truth. I swear to God, people say this all the time, but I'm saying it, and I mean it. There's no place on this planet that I would rather be than right here, right now with you. Because right here, right now with you, I'm with people who understand me. I'm with people who I understand. There's just nothing better. Just doesn't get any better than this. I don't make up a plan of attack for it. Here are my notes from my preparation. I don't do that anymore. I used to a lot. And the truth of the matter is that when I made notes of what I wanted to speak about, I got to the first thing that I started to speak about, and then I made a right turn and never talked about what I intended to talk about. So the place where I always like to start is how I feel about overeating. And I'm going to talk about my experience and strength and hope. But I like to talk about my general feeling about Overeaters Anonymous when I start out, and what the importance of it is to me. So Overeaters Anonymous is the most important thing in my life. And for a number of reasons. One of the things that I know, and by the way, for those of you who've heard me plenty of times, I apologize, You can take a nap now, do whatever you want to do. But I know something. I know if it wasn't for the 12 steps in general and Overeaters Anonymous, I wouldn't be alive today. I wouldn't be alive. There's absolutely no question in my mind about it. And I always like to connect it up to kind of like how strong I feel about it in the law. So in the law, they have things called burdens of proof. We all know those. If it's a civil case, it's a preponderance of the evidence, more likely than not, 51%. Easy, easy. 51%, yeah, I'm sure I wouldn't be. I know that, I wouldn't be alive. How about criminal law? We've all heard this one. Beyond a reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt has been defined variously as, and one of them I really like is, an abiding conviction to a moral certainty. Well, I have an abiding conviction to a moral certainty that I would not be alive today, but for the practice of the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, the opportunity to engage in a spiritual process, and just everything that goes with it. There's no question in my mind I'd be gone. And I just have to look as far as the generation behind me at my father and all of his brothers and sisters who were all gone by my age, all gone by my age, all type 2 diabetics, and I'm a type 2 diabetic, all of them overweight. And I was overweight. I'll talk about some about that. All of whom are those second generation Jews who were culturally connected but not necessarily religiously connected, and who really didn't have God in their lives, who had community in their lives, and who, and I was raised as one of those kids who I couldn't have a stronger connection to my religion, but I was one of those kids that didn't have a God, but I had these. And when I ran into anti-Semitism, I was the kid, who was the one in the fights, So that's how strongly I feel about it. We're kind of getting far extreme, but the point is, I'm here today. And not only that, but I'm experiencing, I would call it a physical, mental, emotional, and every kind of renaissance in my life. So I wouldn't have been satisfied just to come here to stay alive and to stay abstinent and white knuckle it through it and not be happy. If I wasn't going to be happy, then why in God's name would I want to do this? I'd much rather go out in a big flame and go down, than to be dry, than to have no good feeling about things, than to be anxious, to have no serenity, to be angry, to be fearful, to be restless, irritable, and discontented. Why would I want those things in my life? And the greater gift that I was brought by being in this program is that Today, not all the time, but for the most part, I'm happy, joyous, and free. Where I used to be anxious, today, I know something of serenity. Where I used to be angry and, in fact, hateful, today, I know peace, and I have love in my life more than I had. You know, when I started this thing out, it talks about it in the big book. We loved a few people. I loved a few people. My wife, I loved. My wives, I loved. My children, I love more than anything you can imagine. Relationships I've had, I love, you know. Beyond that, I was indifferent to the many, and I hated the rest of them. I hated the rest of them. I wasn't capable of, I did have that short experience of being, I'm of the Woodstock age, so I was a hippie, you know. So I had that short opportunity of peace, love, and dove and caring about my fellow man. But that quickly gave way to law school, and that quickly gave way to being a professional assassin in a courtroom, being able to take people apart, to make them cry, to hurt them, you know. That was my vocation. So I lost the peace and love. I lost it. But guess what? It was a nice thing to have for when I came to compulsive eating, to become a compulsive overeater. By the way, I'll say this. I'm here to talk about my food addiction. I'm here to talk about being a compulsive eater. But the truth of the matter is that this isn't my only fellowship. I'm in the other fellowships too. And interestingly, a lot of people say that, gave up the alcohol and all of a sudden I gained 150 pounds, or I gave up the food and got hooked on cocaine, or all of mine developed parallel and equally. I don't know how it happened. But in the end stage of all of my addictions, I was just that. I was end stage. I don't know how it happened. However, I did get into some of the other fellowships first because I was a lawyer and I was in trouble and I needed a defense. And that's really why I came. I needed a defense. And when I went to the first meeting with somebody, the director of this program, you know, he said, so tell me about your drinking and tell me about your drugging. And then he said, so tell me about, I see that you weigh 270 pounds and you're having breathing problems and you're busting out of your face because the 270, I'm a thin guy. So today I'm under 200, but at 270 pounds, I had double chins. I looked like one of those caricatures in a movie that you'd see the thin guy that they put all the makeup on and there's a face in there. That's what I looked like. No, he never said that. He didn't say that, you know. And later on, I talked to him about it. I said, you know, overeating, compulsive overeating, it's a recognized medical illness. Why didn't you address that? He said, because do you think we're going to go to the Supreme Court? Do you think we're going to go to the Florida bar and tell them that these people are all mad at you and you've missed this and you did that? And it's because you ate too much. You know, there's no way they'd recognize that. So we have something uphill to battle. We do. We really do. By the way, I wasn't a big as a kid. I call them big. I was a skinny kid. I was a skinny kid. And I was embarrassed when I first came in because I wasn't a 300 or 400 pound guy. You know, I was 270. But I heard those stories when I first came in and I said, that's not really me. But, you know, I didn't know there were such things as anorexics and I didn't know there were such things as bulimics. And in fact, I've been diagnosed as an exercise bulimic. Age helps that one a lot, you know. And the truth of the matter is that what all these things have in common is that I was spiritually ill, is that I had the development of character defects that had its onset in a very early age, and I developed unconscious behavioral patterns that put me in a position where I wasn't satisfied and happy with my life. So I acted out, and the way I acted out was generally by trying to medicate myself in all these different ways. And then I've got the obsession, and then it ended up that I'm one of those people that also develop the compulsion, the allergy. So I was a real skinny guy. And in college, I would have to take, I'm not kidding, I would have 100 protein pills a day, 2 quarts of this horrible, back then the drinks, the gain weight drinks were horrible and we didn't have mixers, you know. I just gained a couple pounds of muscle. It was a fight. It was a fight. But somewhere in the middle of my life, it changed. My metabolism changed and my behavioral patterns changed. And where there was a time, and it was a progressive illness, wasn't it? It is. It is a progressive illness. So, but here's my earliest memory of an addictive behavior. I didn't start my thing. So, oh, good. We still have 20 minutes. No, I'm kidding. Now I have to listen for the 5. So I was preschool. We live in Atlantic City, New Jersey. My parents had, it was called a guest house. Today they would call it a bed and breakfast. It was on Oriental Avenue, for those of you who are Monopoly players. And a family was staying with us, and they had a child who was scared to death of the water. And we were on the beach, and it was the summertime, and he would stay at the top of the beach. And somehow I worked with him all day long, and I don't know why, until finally, during the day, he ended up frolicking in the water. And all of the adults came up, and they all, I don't remember the words, but they accepted me, they esteemed me, I felt a part of, I felt, you know, value, I felt all of these things. You know, like Bill Wilson, when he was in Plattsburgh getting ready to go over there, and he said he felt a part of life, finally, you know, he felt a part of life. And I did, I felt a part of life that day. The next day we were back at the guest house, and my brother had helped me build a model of a redstone rocket, which had sharp fins. And this little kid picked up the redstone rocket, and I felt like I was responsible for him. I said, give me the rocket. And he didn't give it to me. And I said, give me the rocket. And he didn't give it to me. And I took the rocket, and he didn't let go of it. And I pulled it, and it slashed those fins that I was afraid of, slashed his hand open. And he started screaming, and the blood's flying. And all the same adults came in who the day before was saying, wow, you're really the best. You're great. We accept you. You're wonderful. This day, they're what? They're saying, what did you do? What's wrong with you? What were you thinking? And I don't remember the exact words. It was how that felt. So I had gone from the top of the heap and feeling accepted to feeling the next day less than, to being feeling like an axe murderer. And I also remember that they kept saying, why did you do that? And I didn't answer. I just stood mute. But I remember the feeling of anger, and it was a feeling of like, I can't defend myself. They've overpowered me, but I was mad. And it was kind of like, it was never my intention to cause a harm. Why are you doing this to me? And that's something that would repeat itself for my entire life. People saying, what's wrong with you? What were you thinking? What did you do? And my thinking, self-righteous and arrogantly, that it wasn't my intention to cause harm. So don't be mad at me. Don't be mad at me. But that was the story of my life. So I wasn't accepted. And guess what? I chased the feeling of wanting to be accepted for the balance of my life. Not the balance of my life. I mean, you know, at least up until I got here. And even here, I would much prefer that people like me than dislike me. You know, we all want acceptance. But I just felt like an outsider, and I needed to be part of it. And I felt a sense of isolation. And as I grew, I medicated. And as I grew, I drank and I drugged and I ate. And I remember being a little kid at my grandparents' house. And they had a coffee table, and everybody would have coffee there, and they had a silver service, sugar holder that they would keep cubes in, and you lift the top and it had little tongs, and they would take little square, you know, sugars and pop them in the coffee. And with everybody sitting around, I managed to like clean out the sugar cubes, you know, until finally somebody said, went one with coffee. I go, where's the sugar? You know, and the jig was up. They caught me. But they were the kind of things I did when it came to eating something that I liked. I could eat as much as anybody. And I used to, in fact, go into some eating kind of contests and win them. You know, I got married. Life was good. I thought life was good, but as good as things got, things didn't get well, you know? So I would develop a really good relationship, and end up in a divorce. All I ever wanted to have was a family, but yet all these addictions, all these character defects that I developed, all these ways of living took me to places that were just unacceptable. And I couldn't maintain relationships. And, you know, and that was the story of my life. I also had ADD and I didn't know it. I didn't know.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Oh my God. All right. So we're going to be quick here. So I find myself a lawyer in trouble. I don't know what to do. Somebody says, if you go to this group, they will help you. They'll help you. So I went to this group and I sat there and the guy said, it was really cute. And the guy said to me, okay, so tell me what your problem is. And I said, here we go. Here it is again. I'm going to tell him what I did. And just like everybody else in my life, he's going to say, what's wrong with you? What you were thinking, you're no good. You're going to have to pay for this. And he just sat there and he looked at me and he was a guy who had a lot of time. And he said, and this is 20 years ago. He said, I understand. He said, I understand. And it feels like it was 5 minutes ago. I've got goosebumps right now. I know a lady named Tommy W. who knew Abby Thatcher and who knew Bill Wilson and Lois and was in their kitchen. And she used to tell me that she called them God bumps. And that's what they are. They're God bumps. They're God bumps. And the great thing is that I call them God bumps today. And when I came into the program, I didn't believe that I had a problem. I didn't believe I was an alcoholic or an addict. I didn't think I had a compulsive eating disorder. Sure, I was overweight, but I was always successful with diets, you know. Diets worked all the time. I was great at exercise and sports, and I'd lose the weight. And you know how long the diets worked? Till they didn't. So I didn't believe in God, and I came here, and I was able to, I'm trying to go fast here. I was able to develop friendships and the fellowship. I was able to work the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous eventually. I was able to develop a relationship with the God of my understanding, which is wonderful, which is a huge part of every single day of my life. I have a food plan and a food program. I am right now, I believe strongly in working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight. I have for at least 15 years, maintained a weight loss of 50 pounds. And right now I'm 3 pounds from my goal weight and working toward maintaining a healthy body weight. In my case, and it's not anybody else's, this is just for me. I look at the American Medical Association and the Body Mass Index, and they tell me that a 24.9 body mass index, I'm not overweight. And I know I've been that before and how great I felt. And so that's the place I want to get to. And I'm close. So I'm close from a point of view of weight. I spend a tremendous amount of time every day working a spiritual program. I've had this great, wonderful opportunity to study Judaism and Christianity and Hinduism. I've worked with a shaman. I read all the pop psychology stuff. I love it all. And it's all so that my spirituality today as a result of all those things. I'm multidisciplinary when it comes to that, but I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm so happy. I'm happy to be here. I do service whenever I can. I am involved in conventions all the time. Next week, I have a position at the SOAR 8 Regional Business Conference. If they asked me to do it, and I said yes. I never say no, rarely say no, unless I've got a conflict. And my life is just, it's great today. I've developed friendships in Overeaters Anonymous that are greater than any friendships I ever had in my life. And when I tell people that I've had friends for 25 years and we're close, you know, we're close, we're so close. It's amazing. It's just amazing. I've gotten the opportunity to work in a treatment center for years now. And I finally found something that I want to do. I found a place where I can help people. I found an opportunity to blend special abilities that I have in that regard and experience in service to others. And I heard that defined as that when we're able to find our special gifts and blend them in service to others, we reach the exaltation and the ecstasy of our spirit, the ultimate goal of all goals. So if we're to work a spiritual program, then what's the ultimate goal? The exaltation and the ecstasy of my spirit. And I get to live that today. I get to live that. I get to know that sitting here that I'm in love with all of you. I actually get to be in love. You know, it's like, not just like I love you, but like I'm in love with all of you in life. And it's not always that way, but it's usually that way. And when it's not that way, then I've been given all these tools and these ways to work where I can find out what's going on and get it taken care of, or talk to my sponsor, or get at the circumstance. So
time
is up. So the last thing that I want to say is, if you haven't heard it from anybody else today, I love you. Thank you for letting me speak.